series of very years when we have a similar picture in cosmology. And this is a typical plot of 20 years ago when we're talking about self-reproducing universe. And the main thing was the great effect of generation of long wavelength fluctuations, which may be so big that put us in different vacuum. Of course, things are very different in string theory because there are many, 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 many fields, etc. Just interesting history. What I will talk about are some topics where the either motivated by landscape or related to the constructions in landscape. And first topic will be about fluctuations, cosmological fluctuations in the series with extra dimensions, as string theory is. This is a picture how string theories are viewing 10-dimensional space-time, and the little thing over there is our three-dimensional brain or three-dimensional world over here. So this is how a cosmologist is looking for the universe. It's a big of the 3+1 dimensional expanding universe with a small extra dimensions. But the practical cosmology actually looking at the picture like that. And in cosmology, most information is coming not from the background expansion, but from fluctuations. And therefore, the question is, how the theory of cosmological fluctuations, which we are probing with a lot of data, may be changed or enriched with the extra dimensions. And we have to include for this fluctuations not only our 3+1 dimensional section, but also a potential vibration fluctuations of inner dimensions. And the difference between this problem today and 20 years ago, in the middle 80s, cosmologists trying to do cosmology with extra dimensions, including fluctuations. The difference is now that there are new players in inner dimensions. There are fluxes and brains, et cetera, et cetera. We have to write down background equation, make some ansatz about the geometry. And what I wrote there is the four-dimensional world with the x coordinates and inner-dimensional world, six, suppose, with y coordinates. We have to write down Einstein equations, 10 dimensionals, and then we have to write down an equation for fluctuations. And it turns out that it's much easier to write down equations for fluctuations than equations for the background. Because so far, I understand the low energy physics is formulated in terms of effective theory, and it's the 10-dimensional uplifted version of the Einstein equations are not written. And we will make much more progress in cosmology studying fluctuations in this context if you guys will provide us with nice blocks in these 10-dimensional Einstein equations. Nevertheless, let us proceed and try to get some sharp statement in this nebulous situation when we don't have 10-dimensional equations. So we know how to classify fluctuations, and those ugly form just shows that we take into account all potential vibration of the space-time, including gravitational waves and vector modes, etc. And then we have to write down equations for fluctuations, including fluctuations of the form fields, displacement of brains, all of the things. It's very difficult to do, but still we can proceed. And I further proceed with a little bit simplified picture. It turns out from examples considered that there is no interesting effects for gravitational waves in the bulk. The gravitational waves, then they are reduced to four-dimensional world. It was usual massless gravitons, and that's it. And there is a gap, we don't see effects of that. No vector modes so far. Even if we take into account fluctuations of fluxes, no vector modes are giving interesting contribution. Interesting story happens with the scalar fluctuations. And what is written, the first line is the scalar fluctuations for the situation we have expanding four-dimensional universe in some inner space. For simplicity, I take it isometric, like the sphere or whatever. And this analysis easily can be generalized if we take more complicated situations. And even if we don't know what is inside, what is a TAB, energy momentum tensor in the bulk, we still can proceed and split the fluctuations. In this case, it will describe only by single wave function psi, because numerically, from the Einstein equations, it follows that all other components are reducing to the psi. Psi is the only potential which describes scalar metric fluctuations in four-dimensional world. For simplicity here also, I consider not Friedman universe, but De Sitter universe. It's technically simpler to do. So my world DS4 is a De Sitter expanded universe with a constant curvature. I will talk later about Friedman universe. And as usually, we make decompositions, and we have two wave-like equations for Q and psi bar, which corresponds to eigenmodes in outer space and inner space. And the remarkable and unexpected thing is that the mass with which the modes appear in our De Sitter world, four-dimensional inflationary world, if you wish, are different from the Kaluza-Klein mass, Mn tilde. And this difference is due to the fact that outer space is curved and has curvature labeled by Hubble parameter H. And this curvature of outer space gives us negative tachyonic contribution to the Kaluza-Klein mode. And this result is generic. It holds for simple models and holds for more complicated models. And this result does not depend on the form of TAB energy momentum tensor I am using. And in a second, I will explain the physical reason for this and why it does not depend on the specific constructions. It belongs to geometry. So the message is, if you consider fluctuations, scalar fluctuations in the 10-dimensional geometry, the four-dimensional observer in De Sitter space-time will see the Kaluza-Klein modes corrected. They will acquire a negative contribution from curved De Sitter space-time. And the situation is unstable if outer space is too much curved. So, and when we are talking about physical numbers, the Hubble parameter during inflation can be as high as 10 to 13 GeV. And what is it you favor Kaluza-Klein mass? If Kaluza-Klein mass is above, it must be above for stability, then we have stable situations. If it's below, it's unstable, it's not good. If they are comparable during inflation, it's also interesting, because we have a light field presented during inflation, which is very good for cosmological fluctuations. Physical meaning of this effect. So to understand physical meaning, take simple models, like very simple compactification with the sphere or brain world. And people did a lot of calculations in Randall-Sandrup scenario or in simple for Rubin compactifications. And the story I'm talking about persists there. And consider simple example. Consider simple example when we have De Sitter multiplied by a d-dimensional sphere. For this metric is written over there, A and R will be scalar factors corresponding to outer and inner space. And the point De Sitter multiplied by the sphere will correspond to scalar factor A exponential, and R is equal to unity. And if we put a bulk cosmological constant just to analyze things, we can write down all the equations, and the story goes into the phase diagram written there. R dot over R are the coordinates. And we see that this De Sitter multiplied by sphere construction corresponds to the saddle point. It's unstable point, and it's unstable exactly with instability, which corresponds to the tachyonic instability found in the Kaluza-Klein type analysis. And this is nothing but gravitational instability of anisotropic metric. And those who are familiar with Narayan metric knows it's unstable. It means that the nature of this tachyonic contribution from outer curved space is nothing but just usual gravitational, classical gravitational instability of anisotropic geometry, which always is anisotropic in the case of compactifications. If we introduce now not De Sitter but Friedman expansion, what we'll get is that this mass, a Kaluza-class mass of those mod from outside, also will be tachyonic. Moreover, it will be time dependent. So another interesting thing is we get time dependence of masses in an expanding universe with compactification. And presumably it's more general statement. Whatever computification you do, KKLT or other things, and your outer space is expanding, we should expect maybe mild time dependence of all the parameters. And this is interesting for cosmology because we can probe it. The effect is small. The effect is the smallness of the Hubble parameter, in units of the tilted bar ecliptic line, the stiffness of the compact dimensions. But again, if we go to the very early universe, it's not necessarily small, and masses may be relatively fast changing. It's interesting for baryogenesis. Anyway, it's a new game in town. Right. So far, I was talking about gravitational instability. What happens if we add fluxes? If we add fluxes, we encounter a new type of instabilities. And showing example for De Sitter multiplier by six-dimensional sphere picture. This is the mass seen by observer in 10-dimensional, in four-dimensional De Sitter and the this axis. And horizontal axis shows the strength of the form field. And the red line corresponds to first Kalutic line mode. And it starts from the negative value, which exactly corresponds to gravitational instability in its unstable mode. If we increase flux, we get these tachyonic contributions smaller and smaller. At some point, we'll have positive mass, very good. We have stabilization due to the fluxes. This is why flux is very involved. However, look at the next mode, first Kalutic line mode, which is a blue curve, which starts from the positive and goes to the negative territory. The stronger flux, the more we encounter negative contribution to the first Kalutic line mode, and we get new type of instability. And this is for this particular compactification. Of course, we should get model when we have we're stable against both type of instabilities. The physics of first Kalutic line instability related to the flux, very strong flux, is probably related to the fact that very strong flux wants to squeeze the configuration and go back to the lowest energy configuration, ADS, instead of De Sitter. Right. Notice that I'm working not in the effective four-dimensional theory. The gravity lives everywhere, and I'm working in 10-dimensional picture. This is why I'm living in the full analysis is done in 10 dimensions. Summary of this section. As far as we have theory with extra dimensions, there will be always quest for the theory of cosmological fluctuations in models with extra dimensions. And always will be quest if we can probe them with the theory of cosmological fluctuations. The nice thing is with inflation is it's zoom out all small things going on during inflation everywhere and bring it at very large scales. It always will be a very good test of string theory. Is it time to do this theory? It was a great interest back when we had simple models like Randall-Sundrom, but I was trying to convince you that even without 10-dimensional equations, we still can get interesting results. Generic properties of fluctuations. There are instabilities, and instabilities exclude regions of the landscape and put constraints on the working stabilizations. And what I found most interesting is that there are the variations in masses in couplings, inevitable variations. They are different from variations due to the rolling of dilaton, which we had in string theory in the old-fashioned string theory. It's a new type of things. If we have KKLT type constructions, we still have their variation of physical masses and parameters. They're probably small, but not necessarily small in very early universe. Right. I finished with this section. And how much time left? Hmm? 15 minutes, very good. I can go to next subject. The next subject is more related to practical cosmology. It's completely different subject. The only things which will be similar with the previous portion words inflation and landscape. Scanning inflation work done with collaboration. And this is bottom-up approach from poor cosmologists to how to reconstruct the potential which is responsible for inflation. You already seen pictures like that scattering diagrams, which shows vertical line amount of gravitational waves in the model in units of scalar field fluctuations. And right is the index of the scalar fluctuations. The blue contours corresponds to VMAP measurement or constraints on scalar fluctuations, constraint on the tensor fluctuations, not observed, the only constraint. And those points are obtained with different models in analysis known as RG flow method, which has nothing to do with RG, just a technique. And so you can get impression that most of the inflationary models are out of the observational territory. So what I will show you, the new method to deal with the ensemble of inflationary models. And this model is pretty much inspired by the landscape story. How we thought about reconstruction of inflationary potentials some time ago. So this is a typical scalar field potential, suppose my favorite Renormal level potential, which is for a polynomial. Still, there is plenty of space to make it very different, make it different models. And on the right, in the right corner, there is a trajectory, how Hubble parameter is changing as the scalar field is rolling down to the minimum of the potential. And inflationary trajectory corresponds to e-folding, and 65 e-folding corresponds to the position of the scalar field, which corresponds to the scale of our visible horizon today. And inflation ends when number of refolding will be zero. So we are running between 65 and zero. Observational data are lying somewhere between 55 and 65. And the name of the game was, aha, from the data, like scattering diagram over there, can we reconstruct the scalar field potential? So what landscape paradigm is changing here. This is some Canadian flavor here. It's a Mont Tremblant landscape. And we may have a fundamental theory, and we may have a plethora of inflationary trajectories. In other words, when we are reconstructing something, we are not reconstructing fundamental theory, but we are reconstructing realization of inflation. We are reconstructing inflationary trajectory. In terms of this picture, if we're going from the top, there are different roads to go to the bottom. And fundamental theory is the same. It's a landscape hypersurface of the scalar field potentials. But particular trajectory is what happens, which brings everything to our local minimum. So what is the most effective way to reconstruct trajectory now? So I'm switching language, reconstructing trajectory, inflationary trajectory. It happens. We don't know which potential was responsible, but inflation was there, Hubble. In the upper box, you see ensemble of trajectories. They're all good. They all give us inflation, and they correspond to the function, Hubble parameter, function of what? The most useful parameterization is to make it a function of a number of refolding, because it's the same for all models. And after some reshuffling, we can make this number of refolding in units of x lying between minus 1 and plus 1. And if we have those trajectories, what is the way to encode them? And mathematically, it's an interesting problem. It's a problem of encoding function, most economic encoding function. There is answer. And the Chebyshev polynomial decomposition is the most economic encoding of function. So we have to decompose the Hubble parameter trajectory in early universe through the Chebyshev polynomials. And information about trajectory will be stored then in coefficients C. So C coefficients, C1, C2, C4, whatever, will tell us which trajectory took place. And if we do this machinery in the left corner, you see the scattering diagram obtained with these methods. Red points and the well covered the territory of observations today. And those are done if I choose 5 Chebyshev polynomials. If I take 7 or 10, it goes wider. And of course, so this is what happens with the space of spaces open up. All the models are good. So how we constrain models? We go to the data, and there is the VMAP data. And in the left corner, you see upper corner, the published spectra, which corresponds to ensemble of those trajectories. And those green blob corresponds to the interval of observations. So all our trajectories should go through this little I mean. And there is a statistical methods, Markov chain, Monte Carlo, which allows to reconstruct the Chebyshev coefficients. It's done here for 4 of them, and you see the scattering, and the box with red dots corresponds to what happens is very simple M², 5² models. And it shows that this type of model is well within observationally reduced values of C parameters. So it's only the methods. The bad news is, we have good methods. The bad news is that the width in the likelihood of distribution of coefficients, not due to the statistics of data, due to the intrinsic degeneracy of the reconstruction. And there are formulas which shows why it is so. We have simple formula for power spectrum of fluctuations expressed through the trajectory functions. Hubble parameter as function of number of effoldings. The formula is shown there in the upper left corner. On the other hand, we have Hamilton-Jacobi equations for the gravity scalar system. Potential as function of phi scalar field can be expressed through the trajectory functions, Hubble parameter and its derivatives. And collecting all together, we can try to address the inverse problem. Suppose we have function p of k. It's a function of scalar fluctuations as function of the wavelengths. This is what we observed. And for given function, we try to resolve all of this to reconstruct the potentials. And what we get has enormous degeneracy. This is a plot of the potential as function of scalar field. And all of those curved corresponds to the same function. Let's make more clear, it's shown over here. The upper curved is how the potentials are depending on phi for the function shown over there at the top for observationally realistic function. And we now can rescale the potential scalar field to bring everything as a middle plot. The middle plot shows that we may have qualitatively different potentials from new inflationary type to chaotic, which give absolutely the same scalar field fluctuations. It's very bad news. And the lower panel shows how Hubble parameter depends on the number of folding or the scale fluctuations for this particular data. And Hubble parameter is very different. And a Hubble parameter is responsible for gravitational waves. And imagine we have single measurement of gravitational waves at any wavelength, just single point. This single point will immediately select one of the curves on the lower plot and lift the degeneracy. The message is, without gravitational waves for next 10 years, we cannot reconstruct the gravitational potentials. And little information about gravitational waves will make reconstruction narrower and narrower, and we may say something about the trajectory of inflationary trajectory. And I'll finish with this. Thank you.
Questions? Robert?
Yeah, because it wants to go to anti de Sitter if its strength is too high.
Anupam.
Landscape picture can become very, I mean, you know, becomes very difficult, I mean, pinning down what should be the scale of it.